Give me a dollar.
11. A lot of guys are winning all the time.
Just luck, Harvey.
It's not luck. It's more than luck.
No, you're right.
It's more than luck.
Cards is all luck.
You don't understand that.
You're listening to a bunch of old Jewish guys playing seven-card stud, high-low split. It's my Uncle Moe's home game, and I'm the youngest guy at the table by at least 40 years. I don't really have much in common with anyone here. These guys come from working-class immigrant families. They grew up together in Winnipeg's North End, which is like coming from an extinct culture, the kind of urban Jewish ghetto I've seen only in movies. But all I need to hear is the rip of a quick shuffle and a few chips splashing the pot, and I feel right at home. Lately, a lot of my lapsed Jewish friends have been studying Kabbalah, going on pilgrimages to Israel, learning how to play klezmer music. If I want to get in touch with my culture, I play cards.
Harry, you bet that's up.
No, who was asking you?
No one didn't say nothing. Got nothing to do.
He said something.
Yeah, he did say something.
What did you do?
He bet four.
The poker chips here at my Uncle Moe's game are real clay chips. I've never played with clay chips before outside of a casino, and they feel good. They're cool to the touch and weigh more in my hand than I'd expected them to. When I fling a few into the pot, they hit with a satisfying crack that makes me feel like a stronger player than I am.
He's playing with scared money. That's his trouble. He's a good poker player.
The best.
Yeah.
He's playing
with scared money.
There are two colors of chips mixed up in the pot. Yellow ones engraved with a drawing of a buffalo and a capital M in gold ink. These come from the Montefiore Club. They're all worn around the edges. Then there are newer blue chips, which have a simpler design and the letters HFL etched into the center. They're from the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge. These two clubs represented two different Jewish communities in Winnipeg, separated by a generation of immigration, by wealth, and by different ideas about what it means to be Jewish. This is a story about how the two clubs clashed, how in time they came together, and how they finally fell apart, just like the neighborhoods they represented. It's about how for the 10 guys here at this card game, absolutely everything changed, except for the one thing that stayed the same. Poker.
Well, if you're talking about penny poker, I'm 71 right now, so you can go back to about 60 years.
Dave Sadomsky, a regular at my Uncle Moe's game.
And the reason I played poker, my dad, every Sunday, had a poker game, and it was all family. Even the rabbi, Frank, used to play there from the Sherzedek Synagogue. We were all friends. Well, at that time, every Jewish family knew each other. In fact, that's how I met my wife. I played with her brother. So sometimes we changed houses, and she was there one time, and we were playing, and she kept on bugging me to take her out. So if I said, well, if I win a poker, I'll take you out. So she cheated. And I took her up. That was the start.
So what's the connection between Jews and cards? Allow my dad to explain. Interrupting him from the back are his brothers, Harvey and Moe.
Well, that's a very old country thing, cards. Our parents played cards. They played poker. They played five-card stud.
Mm-hmm. Your mother played poker.
She was very good at it.
They weren't intellectual, so they were social. So they'd get together. All they needed was a deck of cards. I guess in the old country is like that. And they played cards.
Your father played cards?
Yeah.
Was he a good player?
Terrible.
He was crazy.
He's a little like your Uncle Harvey.
Was he a good sport?
Not that good.
No. Mm-hmm.
What do you mean?
He'd get mad if he lost.
We used to drive him crazy. We used to checking raise with him. We used to get him all hot. We used to get him mad.
What did he do?
He started screaming and swearing at us in Jewish.
Poker, it seems, was a big part of life for the thousands of Jews who emigrated from Poland and Russia to Winnipeg. They came in two spurts. The first after the turn of the century, and then a second wave in the years before and after World War II. They formed a community in the streets lying beside the CPR rail yards. It was a loose jumble of small houses lining the residential streets off of Selkirk, the main drag. The area is best known by its unofficial title.
North End. Probably a rough area, but in those days it wasn't bad. I even went to a rough school, but I got initiated very early in life, finding out what it is to be a Jew. The first day I went to Aberdeen School, one of the boys got a hold of me. I even remember the kid's name, Ed Klukowitz. And he called me an effing Jew.
It's strange to learn that the same Jews who traveled halfway around the world to escape persecution in places like Poland and Ukraine chose to settle down in a tiny Winnipeg neighborhood they shared with Poles and Ukrainians. Somehow, though, they worked it out. Consider the outcome of Dave Sadomski's run-in with Ed Klukowitz.
During the fight, they stopped it, and before you know it, there's two teachers there, and he took us up to the principal's office. And as we were walking out of there, he says, well, why didn't you tell the principal? I says, I don't even know why you even went after me. I don't even know you. I found out, he says, well, that's where my mother and dad talk. He says, that's how I learned about the Jewish people. After that, Ed was my best friend. If anyone would say anything to me, he'd kick the shit out of it.
Despite all their differences, the Jews and their European neighbors probably shared more with each other than they did with the rest of Winnipeg. They were all greenhorns, displaced people, starting from scratch as outsiders in a strange culture. Together, they transformed the North End into something more familiar to them.
But we saw scenes there that you could have seen in Europe, in our neighborhood. When I was a kid living on Manitoba, a couple blocks from Selkirk Avenue, we'd have a blacksmith a block and a half away. There was a shoemaker across the street, couldn't speak a word of English, a Polish fellow, who, a very nice fellow. I never could converse with him, but my buddies and I would go in there, and he'd give us pieces of his kielbasa, which if my kosher mother saw it, she'd probably have a conniption. We had a bootlegger there, who we called Johnny. Him by his designation, Johnny the Johnny bootlegger. Good. I remember seeing a shochet, a ritual slaughter in the backyard.
Moshe yeah, the shochet was there.
No, no. Tell the story about the horse with Moshe Levine.
It was like living in a shtetl.
Not all of Winnipeg's Jews lived in the North End. A previous generation of immigrants had already established themselves in Winnipeg. Many of them were quite wealthy, enough so to live in the posh River Heights neighborhood, also called the South End. They didn't mix much with the North End crowd.
There was a segregation of the Jewish people in those days, but the River Heights was the nicer of all the areas in Winnipeg. They're the ones that the North End boys didn't like, and they didn't like us. I know when I went to the old YMHA, we stuck together. We didn't like the fellas from the, like the Jewish girls were called Jewish princesses in those days, and they come from the South End. So the South End, they had an air about them, you know, well, don't tell us what to do. We got the money and all that, and it wasn't the same.
As my dad has always told it, though, the difference between the North End and South End Jews wasn't just money. The South Enders had made their way in Canada under different circumstances. They were an especially small minority in a time when anti-Semitism was totally acceptable. So their strategy for success was to blend in. Most still practiced Judaism. They kept kosher, went to synagogue and such. But they made an effort to lose the Yiddish stuff, the language, the attitude. When they weren't allowed into the establishment's ritzy exclusive social clubs, they made their own ritzy exclusive social club. The Montefiore, named after a famous Jewish philanthropist, was founded in 1911. North End Jews were not welcome. Norman Tadelman, a longtime Montefiore Club member from the South End, remembers it well.
You have to understand the Montefiore. It was a two-story building. It had excellent kitchen facilities. There was a nice bunch of people, because they were all from the community. They weren't outsiders. Yes. Well, it cost so much to join and so much to play. So it eliminated a lot of the people who were looking to make a living, sort of, in the clubs. It had a cloakroom, a meeting room, a locker room. We all had a bottle of whiskey in the locker. And everybody knew everybody. They'd sit and have a drink together, and everybody would order their dinner. I mean, it's like coming home. Except your wife didn't bug you, that's all. That was the only difference.
When he was my age, my Uncle Mo was just the kind of guy the Montefiore didn't want.
When did you stop going to school?
Grade 9.
Grade 9?
Yeah. 10, I don't know.
You finished 10?
9, 10. What's the difference?
I'm going to find out, you know. If it's 6, I'll find out.
Maybe 7, 8.
Yeah, that's getting lower.
Maybe 4 or 5. Schooling is nothing. I have more education than you did.
Yeah, what kind of education did you have?
Because you're a nerdy, I'm not.
I'm a nerd?
Yeah, you're nerdy, I'm not.
Mo's education took place in pool rooms and gambling joints. Here's how he describes the chief interests of his youth.
Cards, broads, and cars.
Mo was working hard to become a ne'er-do-well. Actually, you have to give Mo credit, because on only $32.50 a week, he did a lot of damage.
And I'll tell you what, $32.50 a week, I had a cars. I went to... I
you had a good backer.
I got clothes at the finest menswear store in the city, Hanford Druids. Uh-huh. They used to phone at 6 o'clock at night when they need a little payment for the clothes. you know the old story.
Who could blame the Montefiore Club for not wanting guys like him? They were doctors, lawyers, and businessmen playing cards for fun. Mo was a hustler. He would have made a career out of separating them from those fancy yellow chips. But there was more to it than that. Mo, like his buddies, was flashy and loud. His English dipped in and out of dirty Yiddish. He told tasteless stories about women. To the men of the Montefiore, he was the wrong kind of Jew, the kind they wanted the world to forget. So when he was my age, Mo had to make do playing cards at smoky underground gambling joints.
But we played at the Unicorn, too.
Oh, that's a private.
I played at the Unicorn.
I started gambling at the Unicorn.
That's you know that? So did I. Top of toast.
The Unicorn was down the basement.
No. Yeah. It was upstairs on Atlantic. That's
a dead card. Hooray.
I played in all these gambling joints on Selkirk Avenue, Main Street. In fact, my uncle, I'm not going to give you his name, though, ran one of the clubs. Well, one was called the... one was Selkirk Avenue. What the hell was it called? Then they had the Unicorn Club. They had the Railway Club. They had a few of them.
Tell me what these clubs were like, and were they legal? What was the situation?
No, they were not legal.
In the 50s, North End poker was an illicit, borderline criminal pastime. It was the same card game played by the gentlemen of the Montefiore. But instead of fine cuisine and a board of directors, the underground clubs had police raids and machine gun holdups. It was fun for a while, but in time the guys had kids, built careers, and they needed to get out. They had too much to lose. Eventually they started their own private club.
But as we get older, they start forming the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge. In fact, I was one of the first presidents and all that. And I loved it. You talk about poker, the original building we had a synagogue right inside the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge. In that building, in the High Hall, there was a synagogue. We never played poker on the Sabbath.
The years went on, and the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge grew. At one time, more than 300 men belonged. By and by, they tried to be more than just a poker club. They had a bowling league, dances, and charity fundraisers. Bar mitzvah receptions, including my dad's, were held at the HFL. But poker remained the main event. The games got hotter. Things were good. But then a strange thing happened. The Montefiore Club approached the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge with an offer. Their members, too, were getting older, and their sons weren't interested in cards. If the HFL was willing, the Montefiore would open its doors. The clubs would merge together, pool their resources. Blue and yellow chips would be stacked on the same tables, and the North End boys could finally call themselves Montefiore Club members. There was much debate at the HFL before they accepted. Some members were flattered by the invitation. Others weren't. Mo was one of them.
Montefiore members are big snobs. They're the biggest snobs you ever met. And if not for the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge, the Montefiore Club would have never existed for a day after we amalgamated. They needed us. They kissed our ass to come there.
If Mo didn't much care for his new fellow club members, then the feeling was more than mutual. Norman Tatelman remembers Mo.
He's one of the notorious guys in the club. His caustic humor gets him into trouble. How do I explain it diplomatically? When a man's losing, and you say something derogatory to him that might be the truth, he doesn't want to hear it. He just gets upset and he really gets irritated. And I'll end it there. I won't say anything.
By all accounts, the merger of the two clubs was not smooth. The Montefiore Club had rules and regulations that the HFL guys were not used to.
Montefiore was older people. You have to be polite, more humble. Nice.
Harry Miles is an 87-year-old card player from the North End.
I can tell you, Charlie Chiswick, he told me, he sat by the table, he said, lift it up, you'll excuse me, you're a fool. 6 months they barred him. He says, I just came up.
Wait, what did he say?
He farted. Yeah. So
they barred him for 6 months.
There were lots of problems, constant incidents and altercations. But the bickering wasn't even the biggest issue. There were harsher realities to be faced.
Well, after the amalgamation of the two clubs, the membership dwindled, and most of it was death.
Alan Chisvin, from the North End, was the last president of the Montefiore Club.
Some people left town. We could never attract young people. Young people, in the main, do not gamble. They'd rather go to a concert or other. I don't know, they do dope or they go drinking, but poker, gambling is not a big thing among the youth.
Poker wasn't big with the youth. Neither was Winnipeg. The town was in a long slump, and everybody felt it, from the north to the south. The Jewish population decreased by half. Older people were dying, younger people were leaving. The North End as it was, the open markets, the street peddlers, the synagogues, the pool halls and clubs, well, it all disappeared. Go there today and you'll see slums, empty storefronts and boarded up windows. A few years ago, the Montefiore Club closed its doors for good.
To me, it feels as part of my life is gone. It's hard to describe, but now that I'm getting older, I miss it because all my personal friends are all gone. But, you know, I was a baby then, and now I'm over 71, so there's not too many guys that are still around in life. You know, a lot of times the people say, gee, this is where I live, this is where I come. Well, I have nothing to brag about anymore. I mean, I lived there. I liked when I lived down there because it was a different era. It was a different world. But I miss it. I really do. And my wife knows it. Now I'm in a rut. So I'm looking, even though I'm retired and all that, I feel I can still get involved. So right now I get involved just going to the justice system, going to the law courts building. I sit there, I'm like a 13th juror. And I know a lot of the judges, a lot of the guys that went to school, these brains out that they see me, they run away because I yell at them.
So, North versus South. Who won in the end? Let's call it a draw. The South End guys passed on. Their kids have moved away. Most North Enders who remained moved into a series of high-rise apartment buildings, which ironically are located in the South End. A big casino opened up. Now the government takes a rake at poker games instead of the hustlers who ran the illegal Unicorn Club. Like Dave Sadomski, my Uncle Mo fell into kind of a rut. But he had two bags of poker chips in his closet, and he had an idea of what to do with them.
What your uncle did was something good for him. He found out the only time he enjoyed playing cards with the certain people that you meet. And when you go to the clubs here that are run by the government, they're not enjoyable. They're strict. They have crazy rules. So Mo said, the heck with it. I'm going to phone some of the guys that still want to play. And everyone that you saw there were all members either of the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge and then later on as the Montefiore Club. So, no, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed.
Play like a putz. Two chicken dealers, they know a lot about Zeko.
Poultry processors.
Their chickens, their chickens died happy.
What are you, okra?
Can you say it quieter so I don't get a headache?
You gotta have a head for a head.
Is the machine on?
I don't know. It's not on. Ah, shut up.
I don't even see it anymore.
Dave, keep quiet.
Oh, will you quit pepping on me?
You talk more than anybody around.
He's right, Dave. He's right. Talking.
You talk too much, Dave.
You talk to everybody.
He's a salesman. Listen, what do you want? Talk
laughable.
Now, maybe you find these guys kind of annoying. But what you have to understand is that every loud, obnoxious put-down is a sign of true affection. In fact, there's one guy at Moe's game who is genuinely disliked, and he receives no abusive comments at all. I kind of feel sorry for him. Harry Miles, on the other hand, shares a deeply affectionate friendship with my uncles. You can tell by the way they denigrate each other.
That's your uncles, yeah?
Yeah.
I think, do you want to know about them or you're not good? I think I don't have to tell you. I think you know more than I.
I know a thing or two.
So they making fun of me. I understand. I have a dollar, thanking God. It came easy to me, the dollar. I want to enjoy. I give my son, my daughter, I give them what the best what they need. Now I talk to my children. I says, I go in the club. I'm losing money. What do you say? Should I sit in the house nighttime to watch the four walls to save a dollar to leave you more a dollar? Or I should go enjoy myself when I come in the club. I have my hair, I enjoy, I laugh, I tell jokes.
Not his hair.
My daughter says, Daddy.
She doesn't know how much you lose.
Don't leave me a dollar. Go enjoy.
You make me sick the way you play.
He, your uncle,
terrible
he
player.
Says if you lose $100, $50, he takes 5 bills more.
You got to be the world's worst poker player.
I'm willing to bet you that tonight you're going to lose. I'll bet you $10.
You see? You want.
They repeat the conversation you just heard about 4 times every day. It's kind of a beautiful thing.
Ace four.
Big ace.
By the end of the night, I've made about $100. Truth be told, I got lucky. But I make a point to needle Mo about it just the same, to show that I care.
Kind of dealing. In jail, you should deal.
This is my culture. It's who I am. It's my job to carry the torch, to irritate the people I care about, and to bring the North End with me wherever I go.
Spiel a little for the kinder. Spiel for the boys.
Spiel for the Mädler.
De Seide und de Bobbe beten Mendel, spiel a Freilach.
Before I leave, Mo gives me a gift. Two plastic bags filled with yellow and blue poker chips. Back at my home game, the Montefiore Club chips are worth a quarter, and the Hebrew Fraternal Lodge chips cash in at a dollar. Anyone with $20 for the buy-in is welcome to come play. For the Sunday edition, this is Jesse Brown in Winnipeg.